Would you please find in your Bibles the book of Philippians in the fourth chapter, Philippians chapter 4. The epistle of the Philippians stands out somewhat from the other epistles that were authored by the Apostle Paul, who was, as I'm confident most of you know, the most prolific writer of the New Testament. And yet there is something about this epistle that is different from all of the rest. It's different to a great extent because of the relationship that seems to have existed between Paul and this particular church, a relationship that was quite close. And as a result, I believe what we see in the pages of this letter is a relationship that is reflected, one of that nature. There's not a lot in this letter that has to do with correcting things, though there is some, but compared to the other, most of the other epistles that Paul wrote, there's very little in regards to his pointing out things that were amiss and things that needed to be corrected. The letter tends more to be reminiscent of the past experiences that they had together. Paul reflects some upon his own life and upon the nature of his work, and he gives recognition to what the Philippians had been doing and the work that they had been doing. Letters like this are invaluable to groups of Christians who want to be joined together in a local congregation and worked together, because it's letters like this that answer questions, just vital questions, like, what are we supposed to do? What kinds of work are we supposed to be engaged in? What is it that God expects out of us? And how do we go about accomplishing what He expects of us? We find answers to questions like that only in the New Testament epistles and the things that are revealed there about what those churches did, how those churches functioned together, how they were organized together, what kinds of works they did. And there's no part of the New Testament that you can go to that has a heading of works of New Testament churches, and then here's 6 or 7 things. And worship of New Testament churches, and here's a list of the things that a church is. That's just not the nature of the document that God has given to us. He reveals those things to us. Unquestionably, He reveals those things to us. But He does it in the context of letters like this that are, you know, very personal sometimes. Sometimes they're very stern and very corrective. But then they're letters. You've heard it said before that we need to remember when we pick up these books of the New Testament and open them to read. We need to remember we're reading other people's mail. It's written in the context of a period of time. It's written in the context of happenings and goings on that had been occurring in the lives of these people. There was past experiences like those between Paul and the Philippians that become part of the document. The references made to those past experiences. And all of those things have to be ferreted out by those that are reading and who are seeking the answers to those kinds of questions we were talking about. So this, along with all of the other New Testament documents, are invaluable sources of information to local congregations. I'd like for us to spend our time this evening reading part of this letter, this very personal, very informal letter. In the fourth chapter of Philippians, verses 14 through 17, where Paul is actually, you know, drawing near to the end of this letter, and as he is summing things up, he says in verse 14, "Nevertheless, you have done well to share with me in my affliction. And you yourselves also know, Philippians, that at the first preaching of the gospel, after I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving, but you alone. For even in Thessalonica you sent a gift more than once for my needs. Not that I seek the gift itself, but I seek for the profit which increases to your account." Now there are just a number of things in those verses that we could spend our time profitably studying about. But I want to focus our attention upon this statement that occurs in verse 15 when he says, "No church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving, but you alone." I want to talk to you about the significance of that. It's kind of easy to read over that. But why? Why was it so that no church, as Paul is describing here, that no church had fellowship? That is, no church participated with him. No church engaged with him in the matter of giving and receiving. He's talking about financial support for Paul's work of preaching. He refers to his trip to Thessalonica. And you can go back in the book of Acts and read Luke's accounts about this in Acts chapter 16, where he talks about Paul having come into the city of Philippi, and he describes how the Philippian church, the church that receives this letter, how that church was established. And then as you read on into chapter 17, you read how Paul, after finishing his work in Philippi, then traveled on to Thessalonica and eventually on down to Athens. For he, as he says in verse 15, "After I departed from Macedonia." Now Macedonia was the region that the city of Philippi was located in. And so he says, "After I left from you, from Macedonia," then he says, I went on down to Thessalonica." Well, that was in the region of Achaia. All of this is in Greece. And he is just bringing to their mind how these things had happened at the beginning of the gospel for those folks. And it's a wonderful story about what these folks had done early on as Christians. Soon after they began having become Christians, soon after they began to meet together and to work together as a church in the city of Philippi, Paul relates how they were engaged in these things. And I'd like to begin our study about this question. Why was it that only the Philippian church had this relationship with him at this point in his preaching? And I'd like to begin by focusing our attention upon perhaps some reasons not. That is, only they had this fellowship with him. And while I may like to know why, I can know this. They weren't the only ones that had the fellowship with him because there was something wrong about what he's teaching. It wasn't because Paul was teaching that which was error. Paul makes a very clear statement many times in the course of his writings about the source of his teaching. Where did his doctrine come from? Galatians chapter 1, for instance, and in verse 11, he says, "For I would have you know, brethren, that the gospel which was preached by me is not according to man, For I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but I received it through a revelation of Jesus Christ. That's just a clear statement that Paul makes about the source of his doctrine, the source of his teaching. We talked a little bit this morning about the fact that not everybody who preaches, not everybody who teaches, not everybody who claims to have a message from God can make this affirmation. Paul could make it as an apostle. He had received revelation from Jesus Christ, and he goes on in that chapter in Galatians to describe having received that revelation. This message that the apostles preached was a given message. It was given to them. It was not something that they devised themselves. It was not something that they heard from somebody else or learned from some other man or a group of men. Now, be honest with you, that's the way that a lot of folks look at the message of the New Testament. That it is the product of the teachings and traditions of various individuals, various men, all down through the ages. But that's not what it claims for itself. We're not going to spend our time this evening talking about whether or not its claim is legitimate. I believe it is a legitimate claim. But folks just need to acknowledge that that is what it claims for itself, to be a message that has emanated not from men, not from the minds of men, but rather from the mind of God Himself. I received it, Paul says, by revelation of Jesus Christ. That's where I got this message from. So, why was it that the Philippian church was the only church that had fellowship with Paul in giving and receiving? Well, it wasn't because he taught error, because he didn't teach error. He taught the revealed message of Jesus Christ. Well, I would say to you also, it is not because his conduct was inappropriate. Not because his life was wrong. Galatians chapter 2 and in verse 20 we find again where Paul writes to his Galatian brethren about this. And he says to them regarding the conduct of his life and the nature of his life, that I have been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and delivered himself up for me. As Paul says, here's how I live now. Wasn't always true, but here's how I live now. He says, I live now as Christ lives in me. I've been crucified with Christ. Paul died. And that's true of every Christian. Every person who is a Christian is someone who is to have died. We are to have died to ourselves. And because we die to ourselves, then somebody else can live in our place. And it's only because we've died to ourselves that somebody else can live in our place. And who is it that's to live in our place? Well, Paul makes it plain here. It's Christ who lives in me. It is indicated by the conduct of our lives as Christians. And it was true of the Apostle Paul. So why did the Philippian church alone support the Apostle Paul's preaching in those early days after that church had been established? Well, I know that it was not because his conduct of life was wrong. Other churches didn't look at him. Now, but I'm not saying Paul didn't have his critics. And I'm not saying that Paul was a sinlessly perfect man, because he makes it very plain he's not. But he is a man who, in whom Christ had begun to live, as is to be true of each one of us. And other churches could not look around and say, yep, look at that Paul. You see what he's doing? He's a liar. He's stealing money. Now, there was no shortages of criticisms of Paul. But he was a man that none could bring against him a charge of a habit of life that was contrary to his master, that was contrary to the way his master wanted him to live. So, it wasn't because of Paul's erroneous doctrines, it wasn't because of Paul's immoral conduct, and it wasn't because of the Philippians' presumption. We're going to be the only ones. We're going to be in charge of the ministry of Paul. Now, there are times when brethren do this. Now, the first two points have dealt with misconducts of the preacher. He could teach that which is erroneous, or he could live in a way that is immoral and wrong. But he didn't. This third point deals with the misconduct of a church, the misbehavior of a congregation. To presume we're going to be in charge of the work of preaching the gospel in this particular place. The church in Philippi didn't do that. They weren't the only ones who sent support to Paul because they had in some way restricted others from doing or attempted to restrict others from doing. Now, you may have, some of you at least, may have heard of something called a sponsoring church, which is quite a popular and acceptable practice among churches of Christ, and has been for many, many years among some. And just to very, very briefly try and to describe this, what a sponsoring church is a church that has determined we're going to be in charge of a particular work of preaching in a particular area. After World War II, some churches began to identify themselves as the sponsoring church for preaching the gospel in Germany. Another one, it was in Italy, and another one was in Japan, and various congregations identified themselves as, we're the sponsoring church. Now what the rest of you churches need to do is you need to send your money for preaching. You need to send your money to us, and we'll oversee it, we'll take care of it, and we'll see that this gets done. Well, a lot of folks said, you know, that just sounds like a great idea. I mean, it seems much more streamlined, much more efficient, can certainly get bigger amounts of money, can do more imposing and impressive sorts of things. Just a lot of reasons why to do this. You know, there's one reason not to do it. It's because there's no New Testament churches that we read about that did it. There were no churches that took on the work of being in charge of seeing to the preaching being done in Macedonia, or the preaching that's being done in Achaia, or in Greece, in the greater Greece. There's just a complete absence of that kind of arrangement, that kind of practice, that kind of work, that kind of presumption by any of the churches of the New Testament. So, when we ask the question, why was it that Philippi was the only one? Well, it wasn't because Paul's doctrine was wrong, it wasn't because Paul's life was wrong, and it wasn't because the Philippians had presumed too much for themselves. So then why? Why was it? Well, I want to suggest to you a few things, and then we'll conclude our study. It may very well have been that it was because Philippi could supply everything that Paul needed. In fact, I think there's pretty good reason to conclude that that was the case. That what they were able to send was all that Paul needed in order to live. If you look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 9, when he's writing to another church, writing to the church in Corinth, he has this to say. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 9. We'll back up to verse 8 where he says, I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to serve you. And when I was present with you and was in need, I was not a burden to anyone. For when the brethren came from Macedonia, that's up there, and that's where Philippi is. He says, when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need. And in everything, I kept myself from being a burden to you and will continue to do so. It may very well be that the reason Paul would say of the Philippians, you're the only ones who sent support to me, was because they were able to provide all that he needed. And it was not necessary for anyone else to. If I could influence congregations in any way about supporting preachers, it would be in this regard. That they be anxious to find what a man needs. Maybe they're going to support a man in some distant place, a distant land. Find what he needs. Find out what he needs. And if they're capable of doing it, supply all that he needs. So that man doesn't have to not only look from church to church A, but then have to go and look at church B and church C and so forth. Now you might say, you know, David, I've got a good answer for that. You see, if church A and church B and church C would send their money to church D, then all that preacher would have to do is deal with church D. It's exactly what you want. And that'd work fine. If we could find where in the New Testament church A and church B and church C sent to church D. But they didn't. They sent directly to the man that they were supporting. And sometimes one church can supply all that that man needs. And that may be why Philippi was the only one that sent to Paul. It may also be because Paul worked. Back in Acts, the 18th chapter, and verse 4, or excuse me, in verse 3, we find where the description of Paul's preaching and the work that he did and traveling. And verse 3 says, because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working for by trade, and they were working for by trade. They were tent makers. Paul knew how to make tents. And so in the course of his preaching, sometimes what he did was he made tents. And he made money from that. And he, as a result, took no funds from churches. And there are a number of allusions that he makes to that in the course of the epistles that he wrote. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verses 1 through 18, we have probably the longest discussion that Paul offers about this. Verses 1 through 18, he talks about receiving support, receiving financial support. And he begins the chapter by making the point that it is his right to receive such support, just like others have. Verse 5, for instance, he says, do we not have a right to take along a believing wife, even as the rest of the apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or do only Barnabas and I not have a right to refrain from working? Who at any time serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat the fruit of it? Or who tends a flock and does not use the milk of the flock? And you can go on reading. His whole point being, here's the principle of a laborer receiving the wages as a result of his work. It's the result of his hire. Now a laborer is supposed to labor. He's supposed to work in order to receive the wages of his hire. And that's true for a preacher too. He's supposed to work. One day my wife was out with the kids and they were at the mall. I tried to make sure they didn't go down there, but they were at the mall and looking around, and our oldest girl saw something that she wanted and she asked for it, and her mom said, no. Well, she was persistent. She kept asking. And finally, Robin said, look, we just can't afford that right now. Just can't get it for you. And her response was, well, if Daddy would get a job, we could afford anything. Well, sometimes folks kind of tend to look at preaching in that way. What Paul is saying here is it is a job. It is labor, and it is right to pay for it. But you have to work for it. But he continues on, and you drop down further in the reading. He begins to talk about the fact that he had not taken wages. He had foregone that right to take wages from the Corinthians. And notice that he says in verse 12, if others share the right over you, do we not more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but we endure all things that we may cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple, that is, priests? Those who attend regularly to the altar have their share with the altar? So also the Lord directed those who proclaim the gospel to get their living from the gospel. But I have used none of these things, and I am not writing these things that it may be done so in my case. For it would be better for me to die than have any man make my boast an empty one. If I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for I am under compulsion. For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this voluntarily, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have a stewardship entrusted to me. What then is my reward? That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge. so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. All in the world Paul is saying here is to the Corinthians, look, I didn't take money from you. I didn't do it because I wanted to do this as an offering. I wanted to do this as something that I was giving. He'd been called as an apostle. His work of preaching had been determined. That's what he was going to be. That's what he was going to do. Was it right for him to receive support? Yes, he's established that it was right. But he was willing to forego that as a gift, as a way of giving to the Lord, as a way of doing for the Lord. And he didn't want the Corinthians to deny him of that. It may very well be that the only reason Paul received support from the Philippians was because he worked to provide whatever was needed in addition. For that was the right thing to do. It may be because other churches were simply unable to give at that particular time. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We'll hurry on. 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verses 11 and 12. We see where Paul establishes this principle. He says, now finish doing it also. He's talking about the Corinthian church taking up a collection that they had committed to, but they hadn't done yet. And so now he says, finish doing it also, that just as there was the readiness to desire it, so there may also be the completion of it by your ability. For if the readiness is present, it is acceptable according to what a man has, not according to what he does not have. God doesn't expect from individuals or from congregations what they're unable to give, what they can't provide. This church needs to understand that it's responsible for what it's able to give, for what it's able to provide, and not beyond that. And the final thing that we might say as to why no other church gave to Paul in this matter is because they were just too busy. They were too involved. They were too racked by division and dissension and fighting and dividing and unable to help. That's one of the great stories about another local congregation, one of the great lessons about another local congregation we read about in the New Testament, the church in Jerusalem. And you will recall perhaps how they confronted various challenges as we read through the book of Acts. And over again, we see them taking measures at the instructions of the apostles, taking measures to deal with circumstances that arose. They addressed problems as problems arose. They corrected the problems as they arose. And as a result, we continue to read several instances throughout the book of Acts of how that church continued to grow. You know, that would have never happened if it was a church that was continually divided, continually busy with having to address problems. Now, every church is going to have problems. Every church is going to face challenges. Question is, are they going to face it? Are they going to deal with it so that they'll be able to do the things that they can do, that the Lord expects them to do? It's a wonderful thing for a church to be busy. It's a terrible thing for a church to be continually busy dealing with internal strife. Philippian church was the only church that sent to Paul at this point in time. The only church that sent to Paul. Whatever the reason may have been for it, it's to their credit that they were a church willing to do what they could do when they could. And to this church, they stand as an example to be dedicated to doing what we can do when we can do it. You may not be a Christian this evening, but we hope and pray that this will be the opportunity that you'll take to give your obedience to the gospel of Christ, believing Jesus to be God's Son, that you'd turn from your sins and confess your faith in Christ, and that you'd be baptized to wash your sins away as we stand and sing.